Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to it. Tuesday, beautiful Tuesday morning, air dawning in the Mile High City. I got the one and only Troy Rank sitting in for Mark, who is off today. Morning, my man. How you doing?
Fantastic. Great drive in. Weather's fantastic, and it's not 110 degrees, so.
All's good, right?
Everything's good,
all's
man.
Good. You got Broncos mini camp coming up later today. All excited to see that.
Get to watch today.
Yes, for the next couple days, we get to watch.
Yeah, that helps. It does. I mean, I'm not being sarcastic, but typically we don't get to watch. We just show up and cover press conferences. So get a little better feel for progress some of the young guys are making.
So, simple question, and I've had this asked to me a lot, and honestly, I can't give a clear-cut answer. What is the difference between an OTA and a mini camp?
The mini camp's mandatory.
That's all it is, then.
I mean, it's similar but different, but mandatory. They've had a sense of urgency in OTAs, so I wouldn't say there's much of a difference. If you're out there as a media member watching, you don't see much of a difference.
No. Those who do the same drills, run the same kind of thing. Honestly, is there much of a difference between what we watch out there in these OTAs and mini camps compared to what folks will see when they go out and watch a lot of these practices? Now, I mean, there'll be some that clearly there's hitting involved, but in terms of a lot of the 7-on-7 and stuff like that, not a whole lot changes.
Yeah, they just get a little more advanced in camp because the playbook, they're a little more familiar with the playbook, so you see more plays. But the biggest difference at camp is they hit. You know, you do see some padded practices. You don't see much of that here during mandatory mini camp, but again, you get a feel for guys. I like to watch to see where the young players are, but frankly, where I've seen the biggest difference from young guys and even veterans new to an offense or defense is the difference from like June 14th to when they report back that first week at training camp, especially offensive players in the playbook. You can tell guys that took that 5 weeks seriously in terms of the learning component, and you can tell guys who just kind of tried to show up and let's just do this, do it live.
Yeah.
And you can tell with young guys because that you cannot get away from the studying element at the NFL level. You just cannot. You're 99% of them aren't physically talented enough to just show up on the offensive side and just play. And that's the biggest difference. Defensive guys, you can hide and kind of work them in, but offensively, it shows up immediately if you're not comfortable with the playbook. And that's where I said yesterday, I think it was on air or even on the afternoon show with the guys, Big Al and D-Mac. Kyle Sloter, I didn't think was going to get back invited back to training camp. He was so bad in OTAs. And the guy that I saw in June and the guy I saw in July, it was just a big shocking juxtaposition. He clearly used that 5 weeks to learn the playbook. And by knowing the plays, all of a sudden his footwork was better, his timing was better, because he had the athleticism, but you weren't seeing it out there on the field. And all of a sudden when he was more comfortable with the playbook, you're like, oh, they got a little something there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so much more on the mini camp looking ahead here throughout the course of the morning. I always love when you sit in because I love talking baseball, and you are such a wealth of knowledge and understanding and observations based on your 15 years covering the Rockies beat. And is this thing just going the wrong way? I mean, do you see this thing turning around? They're closer to last place than they are first place. I'm at a point now where I look up after an off day and see them opening up a series in Philadelphia, and I'm like, oh, thank God they're on the road. I mean, are we at the point now where going on the road is a good thing? And ultimately, will that spell the doom for the Rockies if being on the road is where we want them to be?
For this short compartment, for this short window of time, yes, they need to get away from home. They're not playing well at home. They don't have an offense built to win at home, and their bullpen has been a dumpster fire. And on the road, their starting pitching has been nails. But you and I have talked, Mike, it's not time to push the panic button and live in Panicville. You can see it from here.
Yeah.
Because you cannot be on pace as they are right now to win 30 home games and make the playoffs. Because that would say they're going to somehow win like 57 road games. That's not happening. In their big best year last year in the road, I think they won 41. So if you win, if you're a 500 road team, you're typically a playoff team. Because you win 41 on the road, and then you throw out a 48 to 52 at home, and now you're right there. Well, I mean, they're going to fight to get to 500 at their current pace at home, which it goes back to how the lineup is constructed, and they're top heavy. And the bullpen has been a mess. You know, I like the Brian Shaw signing because I liked his durability. But durability and availability means nothing if you can't perform. And he needs time away from the spotlight. Getting Ottavino back will help. Keeping Hoffman in a setup role and put Senzatella in a setup role. I would reconfigure the pen at this point. You can't keep throwing out Jerry Votto. You know, Votto's the guy they called up. You can't keep rolling out Russin right now. Enough. Like, enough. You got to put your foot down, put out your best talented arms, and make get back going again. Because they're one bad road trip away from being 6-7 out in no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dodgers are playing better. The Diamondbacks are hot. Bumgarner came back last night. He got tossed, but he's back for the Giants. You can't wait to, you know, let it figure it out right now. You got to make change some inventory internally, get yourself going again, and then hope, fingers crossed, white knuckles crossed, that Brian Shaw, Chris Russell, and a couple of those guys, at least one of them, Mike Dunn, between those three, one of them starts figuring it out.
You know, when I see... Let's talk specifically about Dunn and Shaw, because these are two guys that were signed as free agents with a lot of advanced hype, and understandably so, based on what they had done in their previous stops. So as much as I don't think we want to admit it or think about it, acknowledge it, but is it big, bad, boogeyman Coors Field and the Coors Field mentality that creeps into these guys' heads, the guys that come from somewhere else. Now, the guys that are homegrown, at least they grow up within the system with the understanding, the idea that this is what it's all about. Do these guys that come here, do they just get freaked out? Especially maybe the first year around, and it's up to them to figure it out?
Well, I've seen that with players that... One of the issues the Rockies had is they overpay for mediocrity with players who are on bad teams. And they bring him in and say, hey, now you get us over the hump. Well, they're already on bad teams. They've never been in that position before to be a leader and a solid performer on a contending team. So whether it was Ty Wigginton or Jeremy Guthrie, they misstep by, you know, projecting this player would be better in their environment when that player never really won before. The case with Shaw is a little different because he has won. Mike Dunn has pitched big games before. What I see with Shaw specifically is a guy who got a big contract, got a little bit off the rails, and he's pressed. And in baseball, you know, harder, better, faster, it doesn't always work. And he is mechanically, he's a little unique. He's not necessarily a guy you would watch a video and say, hey, do it that way. So he's gotten a little bit off kilter with his mechanics. They're not the easiest thing to fix. And there's no question whether he would ever admit it. His stuff's not as sharp at altitude. And so you're asking, Mike, I see guys when they, you know, he's got a good cutter, a good slider. You know, all of a sudden at altitude, if you're throwing 6 or 7 of 10 out of good 10 good ones instead of 8 or 9, it gets in their head. And he's got to figure it out. I mean, some guys figure it out and push through. But, I mean, I saw what it did to Mike Hampton. I saw what it did to Guthrie. I mean, I could go down the list of pitchers. So he's got to be able to take a step back and figure it out. And right now, to me, the best thing is you can't pitch him in leverage at all. It's bad for him, and it's bad for the team. It's demoralizing.
Hey, Bud Black sending out Brian Shaw right now is the equivalent of...
Wilton Lopez.
I'm gonna make it easy for everybody to understand. It's the equivalent of Vance Joseph sending Isaiah McKenzie back out to catch punts after he's been putting the ball on the turf.
But the difference is Shaw has credibility.
I know, McKenzie, but it's still, though, the idea that, look, the guy just... You can tell the guy can't be trusted, and yet you're still sending him out.
Well, I told this story before, but Wilton Lopez, and I admittedly, full transparency, I didn't get along with him because he was never accountable. He was never available after games when he propane tank Lopez. But he would... Walt Weiss told me one time, he's like, yeah, Troy, you're too hard on him. You don't understand about Lopey. He wants the ball every day. And I said, Walt, you don't have to give it to him. He's terrible.
Right.
And when he comes out of the pen, the body language of the players, if you ever want to know when a reliever's really struggling, watch when he comes out of the pen and watch the body language of his teammates. Because they can't help themselves. In some ways, they're still kids.
Yeah.
And they
head
see that
goes down. They start to kind of walk around a little bit.
Yeah, start skipping and kicking around at the dirt. And that was Lopez that one year. I'm not saying it was Shaw because he's way more accomplished than Lopez. But, yeah, when you see that bullpen door open and a guy comes out that struggled, whew, I think at some point you should just put call waiting in the bullpen and just not take the call.
Busy signal.
Busy All signal.
Hey, coming up, let's talk quarterbacks. What is the buzz around Case Keenum? Has Paxton been better than anticipated? That's coming up next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Troy, you've had a chance. We've had a chance to be out there and watch what has been open to us, the limited times we've had a chance to watch during OTAs, and you've also had a chance to talk to folks behind the scenes. What have been the immediate impressions of Case Keenum to this point?
Well, he's a leader. And again, I know people roll their eyes and say, well, of course, he's the quarterback. He's the leader. No, he came in and did it organically. I asked him at his press conference about the idea that, you know, they're kind of a rudderless offense. We've joked that, you know, if they had a personality or they were a fashion statement, they would have been khaki Dockers. I mean, there was nothing to them, no identity to the Broncos offense the last few years. So they need someone to kind of say, okay, this is who we are. Let's build off this. And Case Keenum has been a leader. He's performed. He's been accurate. He's been as advertised in terms of his accuracy. They need to run the ball, though. You know, the idea that Case Keenum is going to come in here and throw 30, 35 times a game and help caffeinate this offense, that's not happening. You know, they need to run the ball. But my impression of Case Keenum is everything matters to him. I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning, but everything matters. He talks to guys in the huddle. He talks to receivers about, hey, you were a foot short on that route. You cut it off a little short. You got to be here. I'm going to throw the ball here for this reason, but you have to be here. He's about details. I saw him going up to Jake Butt after a practice and say, hey, I need to get your cell phone. We need to make sure and hook you up with this thing so we're on page. That's the type of leadership I want to see in terms of everything matters to him. Whether it will translate to success, I don't know, but you always feel with Keenum, at least when the little time I've been around him, he puts himself in position to succeed based on what he does on and off the field.
Because when you look at him, there isn't anything about him that just jumps out and says, wow, elite franchise quarterback. But the more you watch the NFL and what the NFL has become and the way that offenses are run, I believe that detail, being really, really good detail-oriented quarterback is now a skill. You know what I'm saying? That what you're saying is that preciseness and that demanding that it be run this way and not that way and that everything be done a certain way, very much like we saw with Peyton, that's a skill in today's NFL from a quarterback. That, yeah, you know, just as much as you want a quarterback to be 6'5" and be able to throw the ball over the mountain, there is a skill, isn't there, to the idea that you can do all those things and run that offense as buttoned down as you're describing.
Yeah, it used to be extra. Like, it always was, you got to meet the template, you got to meet the blueprint physically, 6'4", 230, you know, cannon for an arm. And then if you were a smart guy, that was like the intangible. Now, that has to be part of the tangible in the NFL, as you know, I've talked about. You have to have the software to match the hardware. Just because you look the part in the NFL now, the defenses are so complex, the offenses have become so much more complicated in some ways, and to the NFL's detriment at times. But you can't walk in and just say, hey, snap me the ball, we're going to run around and make plays. That doesn't exist at the NFL level. And the second thing about that, part of the reason it doesn't, Mike, to your point about attention to detail, how many teams really turn the ball over a lot anymore? You don't. Like, you don't see quarterbacks with 20-plus interceptions consistently anymore. A quarterback with, like, 15 picks, which is less than one per game, that's considered a big amount now. And it used to be, you know, the Brett Favre's of the world and Eli Manning, the gunslinger, throw it around the yard, you know, you get your 35 touchdowns and you got 22 picks and you live with it. Teams don't live with it anymore.
To your point, here are the top 10 quarterbacks from a year ago, and these are their interception totals. Brady, 8. Philip Rivers, 10. Stafford, 10. Breeze, 8. Roethlisberger, 14, the highest of the group. Ryan, 12. Cousins, 13. Smith, 5. Wilson, 11. Goff, 7. It's the way that offenses are constructed. High percentage, high accuracy, 60, 65% completion. Very much. I mean, you can call it dink and dunk, but it's the way offenses are now. And it's all based on the idea of spreading the field and being very precise and just putting together drives and marching down the field methodically and trust that your quarterback will take care of the football. You know, keeping your interception total down is not predicated on you got to be 6'5" and you got to be able to throw, you know, a cannon. It's being able to make smart decisions. It's about being precise. It's about being detail-oriented in what you're doing with your offense. Everybody being on the same page. So you know what? If you got a quarterback that can do that, I guess I don't really care if he's 6 foot tall and doesn't really, you know, run around like Russell Wilson does.
I was talking to a friend about that. If Case Keenum were 6'4", people would love this signing when you look at his statistics from last year. I mean, he was the only quarterback that was more accurate last year than Case Keenum was Drew Brees. I mean, he was that type of player. He's a top 100 player in the league. Again, it's his past that haunts him because of the fact that he was a journeyman prior to last year. The Broncos think that helps him, that gives him that toughness and that thickness of skin, that his past failure will lead to this future success, that this last year was a jumping off point, that he's not going to be the greatest one-hit wonder since the Macarena. Because if he is, and if he's a one-hit wonder, they're dead. They're dead in the water, and we'll talk more about it after the break and what that would mean for Paxton Lynch. But if Case Keenum is not good, if he's not something resembling last season, they can't get back to the playoffs, in my opinion. They need him to be not great, but just be the – if he's the guy he was in Minnesota last year, they're going to have a chance to contend deep into the year.
By the way, I listed off the top 10 quarterbacks. Case Keenum, number 12. So he wasn't in the top 10, but for those of you who are wondering why I didn't mention his name, he's not in the top 10, but he was number 12. So, to your point, if he can repeat, 67% completion, 3,500 yards, 22 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions, which places him, by the way, among starting quarterbacks. That was a tie for second.
Who had the most last year?
The most interceptions among, you know, by a starting, Deshaun Kizer had 22, but does that count?
Take him out. Who's next to the guy that was actually good?
Cam Newton had 16.
Right. Okay, that's my point. Like, you're not throwing it around the yard anymore. The one guy was a good player. Then I think the year before it was Rivers at, like, 18. Like, you don't get to a chance to get to 16, 18 picks. So we'll see. Again, 7 picks. Last year the Broncos quarterbacks threw 22 interceptions combined. They were the only team that was worse were the Cleveland Browns.
Morning Brew is coming up. Yeah, what about Paxton Lynch? What has the spring been like for him? And, hey, say whatever you will about the Broncos, at least everybody's there for minicamp. Can't say that about other places around the NFL. That's all coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to keep lightning, and you're going to crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat!
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet.
Let's get it on!
What you want from your room is obviously a lead back. But you need 2 or 3 backs to make it through the entire season. So that won't change, you know, as far as headroom. You know, that won't change. I mean, you want more than one guy to be a contributor there.
Troy Rankin for Mark today as we kick off the morning brew. VJ, they're talking about the running back stable as we get into mandatory minicamp later today. There will be a depth chart, at least for the coaches, coming out of the spring part of the season here. So who do you think is going to be on top at the running back position?
Man, I believe it'll be Devontae Booker coming
going into camp.
Going into camp, but again, we've seen this in multiple seasons where 3 to 4 days into camp, like Bowles last year, what was it, a weekend? He was essentially named the starter without saying it because he was just taking the first team reps. Booker, I think, will leave June as the top back. But what I've learned about this, the backs see it this way, and then privately they see it. It's a wide open competition. It's not as if Booker is so far ahead of the young players that you're like, oh, it's obvious. I mean, Booker has experience, and he's shown some flashes, but he's not going to be the every-down back if he's averaging 3.6 yards per carry. He's got to be able to show he can break tackles at the line of scrimmage. If he does that, maybe he holds on to the job. Again, the guy I'm keeping an eye on is Royce Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a younger version of C.J. Anderson. He's got a lot of experience. I talked to him at length yesterday at the Broncos Rookie Community Day, where they did great work at the Food Bank of the Rockies and then Denver Broncos Boys and Girls Club, and later at I think it was UC Health Center and visiting patients. So good on them and those rookies. But Royce Freeman, when you talk to him, Mike, this guy is a rookie in name only. He's played a lot of football. He's very mature. He understands that he's got to show, you know, acumen and pass pro to get on the field, but he gets it, is what I'm getting at. So the idea of him starting early in the season, I think, is very feasible.
Next on the Morning Brew.
This ball is blasted to deep right center by Desmond. Nobody's going to catch this one. Here the Rockies bullpen. Make it 8-1. Home run number 9 for Desi.
One of those rare, positive, bright moments at home for the Rockies this season. There haven't been many of them, which is maybe why it's good news that they're back out on the road. They open up a series in Philadelphia. But we saw this last year. We saw them come out gangbusters on the road, and then eventually, as the season went along, they really fell apart on the road, and they needed to rely on their home field play to ensure that they got into that wild card game. Do you see the same thing happening this year? Is this road magic destined to run out, or can it continue all season long?
Well, they can be good on the road, but the idea, what are they going to win on the road, Mike? Are they going to win 41, 42, 43? I mean, they set a franchise record last year at 41, so this, you know, yeah, they've been better on the road, and their starting pitching has allowed that to happen, but what is your realistic expectation? They're not going to win, for me, 50 games on the road. So if they can win 41, 42 games on the road, then that gives them a fighting chance, because you figure at some point they're going to figure it out at home. But my word, have they been awful at home. And in their worst seasons, they've never been this bad at home. So they've lost 7 straight at home, allowed at least 7 runs in every one of those games. They've got to get it figured out at home. But tonight, John Gray, put your foot down and pitch like a dominant starter. I'm not even using the word ace, because if you don't figure it out, John Gray, your stuff for me is starting to profile as a reliever. You've pitched like a fifth starter for the better part of a year plus now. It's time, if you're going to be a guy, these are games you need to win.
Next on the Morning Brew.
I haven't talked to him. I mean, I didn't even know about it until like last night and everything. So, fake news.
Rob Gronkowski. A lot of NFL news out there. And it all centers around, wow, what a surprise. Money. New contracts. So you got Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski were both at the Patriots mandatory minicamp. Now they have an OTA this week, and they're skipping it because it's voluntary. Khalil Mack isn't showing up at Raiders minicamp. Julio Jones not showing up at Falcons mandatory minicamp. It's all because of contracts, right? It's always about the money, right? Do these players, do they have a point? Are they doing the right thing? And what do you make, especially the Patriots stuff?
Well, there's a little more drama than in years past. I think Tom Brady has finally said, like, hey, his legacy's tied to Bill Belichick, and he's basically saying, I'm not going to deal with this all the time anymore. I'm going to do this on my own terms. And I actually like that about Brady. I mean, he's gotten to a point in his career. It's like he's always set the example of the star player who allows himself to be coached by Belichick. He kind of makes all the pieces fit because he doesn't throw an attitude. He doesn't throw shade about it. He lets Belichick, you know, basically humble him in those meetings. Now he's kind of got to the point where it's like, really? And then Belichick, remember, belittled him, I thought, after they won to get to the AFC Championship about his thumb, the laceration on his thumb, and it's like, well, it wasn't open-heart surgery. When it's like, really? Like, why would you do that to your quarterback? So I get it. But at the end of the day, they're really talented, they're really good, and the drama didn't prevent them from winning last year.
Yeah, but the drama came up late. Came out late. You know, now it's been out there like an open wound festering for several months now. And you're right, Brady's always been the good soldier. But the fact that now he is making it about him, I mean, maybe it's time. Maybe that's what he should do. But again, the guy that's been the ultimate team first guy is now making it about him first. How much of a trickle down does that have on that rest of the team? Well, and the whole buy-in for the rest of that team if their ultimate team first guy is now me first?
Well, I don't know that he's me first enough. He's just kind of grown weary of Belichick. We saw this, Mike, with Shanahan and Elway. Is it the system or is it the players? And there gets to be a point where there's a rub between the, you know, who needs to get credit. But Brady has always been able to, when it gets to on field, to separate all that. And as long as he can. But I will say this, when you do have drama and then adversity comes, that's when you can see some fissures in this. And that's what we need to see with the Patriots. Because when they stay healthy and they throw their roster out, they're really good. But the Edelman thing hurts him. It hurts Brady. You know, if Chris Hogan isn't healthy, you know, what does that offense look like? I think Sony Michel, as crazy as it sounds, could be the key to that offense. And he hasn't looked great in minicamp. So we'll see. I'm not going to be the guy that discounts the Patriots because they find ways to win. They start slowly, and then they're the best team in the AFC by the end of the year.
Next on The Morning Bro.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have him for 10 years, but Kevin Durant, he already, look what he did for us last year. I mean, he did us a great service, so he's earned the right to sign whatever deal he wants, and I just want him to sign a deal, but want him to be happy and want him to know that we want him as long as he wants to be here. He's earned that to kind of lay out the terms.
That's Bob Myers, the Warriors general manager. Here we are. The Warriors haven't even had their victory parade yet, and there's all the speculation surrounding what's going to happen next with LeBron James. KD's going to get his new deal. It looks like the spat between Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs might be reconciled, as there's now talk about a max deal. What I'm getting at is the NBA offseason more interesting than the NBA season.
It is right now because of the Warriors. There's no question. Kevin Durant going to the Warriors changed the dynamic of how you view the NBA. If he doesn't go to the Warriors, you're like, 6-8 teams have a chance to win it. Once he went to the Warriors, you're like, man, one team, Houston, two teams, maybe Boston, if Hayward had stayed healthy and Kyrie Irving had stayed healthy. It has changed how you view the NBA. But their offseason, they love this. Love, love, love this. Because, you know, LeBron watches. He's on a family vacation, I believe, for a couple of weeks. When he comes back here in the middle of June, boy, it is going to be LeBron mania. Where is he going to go? I think he's going to end up at the Lakers. My prediction is he end up at the Lakers. I don't have any insight on that other than following the tea leaves of him wanting to live in California, deal with Hollywood. But Kevin Durant being able to basically, it's fascinating to me for a GM to basically say it's a blank check, fill out the contract, because. Let's put that in juxtaposition with the NFL. Aaron Donald doesn't have a contract. He is, for me, if not the best player in the NFL, he's in the top three. How does he not have a contract? Khalil Mack.
Yeah, Julio Jones.
Julio Jones, I get a little bit.
But what you're saying is that you don't see these protracted contract stalemates in the NBA like you do in the NFL.
It is such a... And everything in the NFL is crazy. The guy holds out. Oh, he's selfish. It's like he's just getting what he's earned. I mean, Aaron Donald, you're going to call him selfish? What else could he have done to earn the max contract, the NFL version of the max contract?
NBA, they want to spend the money.
They just throw
it
around.
They throw it around.
There's guys making max money that I don't even know their name.
They got gobs of it. Gobs of it. Here you go.
NFL,
they got
Curtis Granderson a few years ago was making the same number in baseball as Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
No, it is crazy to
me. These players have to just grind and work for their money. They do. All right, that'll do it for The Morning Brew. Bring that to each and every morning at 6:30. Coming up next, what is the talk around Paxton Lynch throughout this spring? Has he done enough to open eyes for training camp? That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Looking forward to the Broncos' mandatory minicamp, which we'll get a chance to watch and continue to watch these quarterbacks. Continue to watch Paxton Lynch and see what...
No, Mike, seriously, what is the fascination with Paxton Lynch at this point and if his career? Year three, he's never won a game as a starter. Why are people still so intrigued by the fact? Because for me, if he plays, they're not going back to the playoffs. They signed Case Keenum to get him back to the playoffs.
Okay, I see where you're going. I think it's a very simple answer. Because Keenum represents... There is a perceived ceiling to what Case Keenum is. He's a journeyman / serviceable quarterback who had a really good year last year, but there's still a lot of healthy skepticism about whether or not there's a next gear for him. While there's a ceiling on Keenum, I think there still exists, Cecil, and I understand your almost bewilderment over the continued coverage or conversation that surrounds Paxton Lynch. I think what it comes down to is still this. He was a former first-round pick. There was a reason why he was taken in the first round. He has a skill set that makes him a first-round quarterback, and there is still the hope that he is salvageable to the point where there is a long-term bright future. I think that's where it comes from, is that with Keenum, there's a ceiling that suggests this is only a stopgap, and there's continued interest, curiosity, whatever, in Lynch because of what he could still possibly represent down the road. That's the best answer I can give you.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Does it make sense, though?
It doesn't make sense to me because he has to prove it at some point. He lost the job to a seventh rounder in back-to-back years and just shrugged his shoulders like, I tried. He had a chance to go back into a game late in the season and cried on the sidelines at Oakland. He had a chance to play at Washington, and he couldn't get on the field when guys are playing with torn rotator cuffs. He shot finally against the Chiefs when nothing mattered. He played better, but you know they didn't win, and he still made mistakes. I'm just in prove it mode with Paxton. He's been all pro in OTAs before. He certainly is a great athlete. I don't root against anyone. I'm just saying that for me, I'd want to see it. And my next thing is, it's like if your ace goes out in baseball, and you're like, well, what about that fifth starter? Well, again, if we're talking about the fifth starter being this guy, your season's lost. And if you're talking about, for me, based on the player I've seen, being intrigued by Paxton Lynch, then you're just saying, for me, you should have drafted a quarterback because I haven't seen enough from him to think, well, if Keenum doesn't work out, they have this Paxton Lynch guy that could save the season. I don't see that. Now, I hope I'm wrong that he goes out in training camp and we see a different version of him, but it all comes down to when they get into pads and they start running defenses that are more complex. That has been the fog that has to lift over the line of scrimmage for him. If he does that, maybe he's salvageable. But what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean that he's salvageable? They didn't draft him in the first round to be a backup. I don't know. Over it because of the fact, for me, I'd say over it. My focus has shifted to Case Keenum. Because if Case Keenum can be the guy he was last year, they have a chance to have a rebound season. If we're going to have a conversation of, if Case Keenum isn't the guy, then A, they probably made a mistake by not drafting a quarterback. And B, what confidence do we have that Lynch would be able to save the season?
Because
I haven't seen that.
Here's the answer. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm telling you why there is still this continued, I guess, interest, fascination, whatever, is that who on this team at least has the skill set to potentially be a franchise quarterback?
He has the athleticism.
Okay, I'm just talking about the skill set. And if the idea is for a fan base that is looking at this team and understands that if this thing is going to be fixed and fixed right, they got to get the long-term answer at quarterback, Case Keenum, by virtue of the two-year deal that he signed, and Bronco fans are savvy enough to understand that it's basically a one-year deal, understand that this guy right now looks like a stopgap. And they know that stopgaps are just that. They're not long-term. They're stopgaps. So the idea is who has the potential to perhaps one day be the guy. And because this guy was drafted in the first round, because John Elway continues to have faith in him, and because Bronco fans want to have faith in John Elway, I think that that's why there's still a healthy amount. You're right. In just about any other NFL city, there wouldn't be anything like this. But I think the last three-plus years of poor quarterback play has taken its toll that we still continue to look at a guy like Paxton Lynch and think what could be. For as long as he's here. Now, if the Broncos just decide to cut ties with him, okay. But as long as he's here, I think he still represents the possibility of what could be. That's the best answer I can give you.
You need a go-go gadget arm for that reach. I'm perplexed looking at the thing. We're trying to find ways to make him relevant in this conversation that, for me, if Case Keenum isn't good – It doesn't matter. Their season's not going to go to where they want it to go.
Oh, this season, you're right. But I think it's if the sense is if Lynch is developing and getting better and turning some kind of corner, that even if he isn't a viable, backup this year, that there's still something that's there for the long term, because you still have him under control for two more years.
If Case Keenum doesn't work out this year, their quarterback of the future is not on the roster right now. That's my prediction.
Okay. I agree with you. Okay, listen, I'm not hitching my wagon to Paxton Lynch at all.
The lie detector test determined that was a lie.
All right, last August I said the Broncos quarterback of the future was not on this roster. Last August I said it, and that included Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian. So I don't think it's Paxton Lynch either. I'm answering your question as to why the Lynch talk continues out there.
I'm not rooting against him. I hope he's better for his sake and for his development. But again, for me, the fascination is misplaced. Focus on Keenum, because if Keenum is good, your Broncos season as a Broncos fan is going to be way more satisfying. Because if he's not, it's back to the mess that we've witnessed the last couple of years, especially last season.
All right, let's get down to brass tacks straight out. Is this going to be a better Broncos team than last year? We'll answer that question for you coming up next.